confess, closed case, wipe the guilt off my face. But wanting you, I can't erase, 'cause you're too good to lose. I confess, closed case, wipe the guilt off my face. But wanting you, I can't erase, 'cause you're too good to lose.
Anyway, that was a rough transition. This is the podcast without a name, Rich. We are on live. There it is. We'll play it this time. This is our theme song, if you will. And we are the podcast without a name, coming to you live pretty much everywhere. Facebook, Spreaker, YouTube, Periscope, Ustream, you name it. We're there, just chilling, like a villain. Spreaker! Anywho. We are the podcast without a name. We are, hanging out. We just recorded a podcast, so we'll be publishing it in the next 24 to 72 hours. Or, that's a pretty big thing. I'm going to say 24 to 48 hours. Anyway, if you're just catching us, what we like to do is we like to do some live streaming after we record our kind of weekly, but more like monthly podcast that's about 45 minutes. There's three of us. Anthony's not with us right now. But we like to call ourselves critical thinkers, but what we really like to do is just talk about what's going on in the world, largely surrounding politics and most recently the Trump election and the ensuing chaos that was the left and the right battling. But here we are. This is us. This is Rich and Joe. You can find us on Twitter at No Name Podcaster. We're on Facebook at The Podcast Without a Name. We're on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, everywhere where podcasts can be found. That's where we are. If you want to catch us live, you'll catch us wherever you're catching us right now. We'll probably be doing this over and over again every time we have some sort of podcast that we record. But yeah, here we are. Rich, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here. I got to be honest, the live stream is, I'm not biased towards it, but it is fun for me because I think it's a little more unstructured. I'm an unstructured kind of a guy, so I look forward to our little freelance talks, and hopefully they gain a little more traction.
I like the live stream too because for the same reasons, right? So if you follow our podcast, you'll see that we do like to have a little more structure. We do go off and have a lot of fun, don't get me wrong. But we tend to have a little bit of an agenda to get down on and kind of get to the bits and pieces of it. Sometimes we have some good show notes with some links, and sometimes it leaves some questions hanging. But the live stream is fun because this is completely unscripted right now. This is just who we are, And ultimately, what we want to be is, you know, some sort of alternative media that we can interact with our listeners, you know, to the best that we can. And I realize it is, what, it's 12 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday night, so there's probably not many people out trolling to listen, but, you know, it's going to be out there. You can reply it and listen to us and maybe get an idea of who we are and what we stand for. But that's a good question. What we do stand for is we stand for open thought and discussion. There's nothing's held back. We will consider any opinion. We tend to be, and Rich, you could correct me if I'm wrong with characterizing this, but we tend to be center right. And maybe that's not from our own definition. That's just because how things have gone, and we may have found ourselves there. But we do hold the principle of being fluid with our opinions and taking data and being able to come to different conclusions and maybe changing. That's just who we are. This is what we do. We like to explore, you know, some deep topics like critical thinking and cognitive biases and things like that. That's something we'll touch on this evening to give you an idea of what we're about. But generally, we just discuss. We just talk. Right. And we do encourage, we do have a bunch of potential guests lined up. We just got to make the time and get better with scheduling. But we have some guests lined up that are just regular people, just like, you know, Rich and myself. And just they just want to get their voice out there and talk. And that's really why we're doing this. So if you happen to stumble upon us and, you know, you're wondering who the hell are these dudes drinking beers at 12:10 a.m. on a Wednesday night. It's the podcast without a name. That's what we do, you know?
That's how we roll, son.
That's how we roll. We have unique backgrounds. We like to think we have a good perspective to bring to the table. You know, that's it. That's what we are. Anyway, Rich, what are you drinking this evening?
Narragansett Lager. It's the beer drunk by the famous, immortal Captain Quint from Jaws. The only Jaws that's worth watching. You know, he was a fucking hero, man. He was great. Great.
He is a hero.
And I don't know if I ever got this idea to you, Joe, the idea of putting out... I had this movie idea. I got to approach the people at Sony because they own the rights to Jaws. Or actually, no, it's not... is it Paramount? Well, one of those movie studios.
Yeah.
But... I wanted to do a remake of Jaws because reboots are so popular right now.
Oh, yeah.
Reboot of the original Jaws.
Reboot.
Not a sequel, like Jaws's mom or some shit like that, but a reboot told through the eyes of Captain Quint, give his whole backstory, what made him the surly sea captain that he was, his experiences in the World War II on the SS Indianapolis, which is a very compelling story in itself if you're a historian.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, movie execs, I got a whole thing drawn up. I'd like to pitch it. Get at me, dog.
So Hollywood, come on in. Give us a call. I'm Rich's agent, by the way, so I get about 15% off the top, just let you know.
10.
All right. 12.5.
Deal.
Deal. Done.
Let's shake on it.
all right. So I have a couple things that I figured maybe we'll just like talk about, and one of the main reasons why I'm bringing this up is because I'm currently going through a little bit of a leadership seminar at my day job, for which I will not post. And you'll also notice from us we do not post our last names because this is not our livelihoods. So we're not going to sit here and put our names out there for some, you know, activist to come and take up a cause to get us fired. So you'll hear our first names all the time. I'd imagine if we hit some sort of critical mass with people listening that we would be willing to be more of an open book. I don't think any of us would object to that, but I think right now that's what we keep it to. But anyway, I'm going through a leadership seminar at work, and one of the things that came up today was the idea of what frames our actions and our thoughts and how we, you know, kind of go about our everyday life when it comes to interacting with other people and things that go on in the world. And one of the things that was brought up was called the ladder of inference. And the ladder of inference actually was developed by, I forget what university, but there's some actually heavy research behind this. This is not just some sort of theory that someone came up with, but there was some empirical research that was compiled to put this together. And essentially, these are the kind of things that really kind of drive us. And even if we're not consciously thinking about this, this is the type of things that I think a critical thinker would naturally kind of go through and be conscious of this. And what the ladder of inference actually says is there's a series of, rungs in a ladder. Is it rungs in a ladder? Is that what they would be?
Yeah, rungs.
Rungs in right? a ladder, yeah.
Rungs in a ladder that we go through in our thought and action process for which we have vulnerability to some sort of bias. Without getting too in-depth into it, I'll leave a link in the live cast show notes somewhere, and you could kind of read up it on yourself. But the big takeaway here is, and if we could get this on video somehow, that'd be awesome. There's facts and there's reality, things that we experience every day. And then what happens is, as humans, we select certain things from these reality for whatever reason, whether we're very emotional or for a reason that we'll cover later when it comes to the seeds process and bias, and we'll touch on that. We select things from this reality, and then we interpret it through that lens and that optics, and we come up with a series of assumptions. And those assumptions, you can kind of see where I'm going with this, lead to some sort of conclusions that are beliefs and then ultimately either turn into actions. And for what we're talking about here is beliefs. And since we're talking about political commentary here, it's not always actions, but you could kind of talk about the actions in the context of how things play out in the world. But every one of these steps is a potential place for us to, or not even a potential place, but they're documented places where we kind of inject something into the reality and facts to spin it a certain way that kind of favor us, whether we believe it or not, or whether we understand it or not. But the whole point of this is to measure it and for us to understand that this is happening so we could maybe catch ourselves in these things. And I think, Rich, I think what's funny is, I know we had, before we got on the show, you had talked about how you were reading up on it because I'd sent you the notes and you thought it was interesting. It was pretty neat. But I would venture to say you are conscious of this without knowing it because of the type of personality you are. I think you're a pretty solid critical thinker. I think you actively listen, and I think you're able to see other people's views. So I think this is something that you're actually pretty in tune on. And I think we kind of all are, and that's why we're kind of doing this. But, Is there anything like when you were reading through this that was kind of like, wow, that's surprising? I didn't really think about it in that context, or something that maybe even enlightened you, even though you're already a pretty good seasoned critical thinker.
Well, what's kind of funny is my company is very much into this sort of cognitive exercises or understanding how people think or come to decisions. So I'm semi-familiar with this. I may not have seen it exactly as it's laid out in this article that you sent me, but it's something that we are constantly talking about and doing at my work, because my work is very much, even though it's kind of a more in the entertainment realm than really anything that's very serious. I mean, it's a serious business. We make a pretty good bit of bang for what we do, but we're really about innovation, and innovation really, to be innovative, you kind of have to understand critical thinking processes and how it works and how to, judge ideas or how to engage in conversations with people and how to, judge your interpretation of things and other people's interpretations of things, how to have difficult conversations. So in a way, I'm already sort of familiar with this, but the way it's laid out, with the infographic, I guess you'd call it, of there being a ladder and different steps to things is something that I'm not completely familiar with, but I find helpful. And it's something that, yeah, I mean, definitely, after reading it, I can see, like, wow, yeah, I definitely do that. That's something that I engage in all the time.
Yeah, and I think it kind of codifies the everyday person's experience if they were to kind of look back on themselves. And I would take this one step further for someone like you and Anthony, who's not here. I think you guys are conscious of these you know, steps, probably without even knowing it, just because being a person that interacts with you guys all the time and we have debates and we talk a little bit, we probably agree more than we debate. But I get the sense that you guys are really cognizant of, you know, your shortfalls, or like things that you might be kind of leaning towards for whatever experience you may have had, or something in your life that you're, you know, proximity to you that might give you a skewed viewpoint. I think we control for that really well. And that's kind of how this fits into the context of who we are. But the bigger takeaway from this for listeners is this is a model that you could take and you could use for yourself, like when it comes to bettering yourself as, you know, as a citizen, if you want to say that, but as a consumer of social media is the better, you know, use for this, right? There's some tips. I'll put this link in the show articles, show notes. It's from mindtools.com, and they covered this down really well. They don't, this, it's not the thick research, although this is underpinned by peer-reviewed research. But they really cover down on the basics and the conclusions and the things you could do to implement the style of critical thinking. One of the things they talk about is asking yourself questions when you're looking at, if you're on Facebook and you see something that, you know, maybe gets you really emotional, or it seems really just so far out there that it's like, oh my God, how can I not care about this? You got to think to yourself, you know, is this the right conclusion? Meaning what you're seeing in that article, is that really the message in that article? Is that real? Is that what's really going on here, right? And when it comes to your reactions to it and things that you might be compelling yourself to do, are you making the right assumptions in the course of action that you might be taking? Whether that's just resharing it, or, you know, lighting a fire under your ass and you're going to go out there and become an activist against whatever it is or for whatever it is, right? And then in that same context, you want to think about, well, if this isn't the right conclusion, or am I making the wrong assumptions, what would be the right conclusion given this data? Or what are the right assumptions that I should be making based on the facts in what's really going on here? And do the people who are messaging this to you really believe in that? I think that's really probably an undervalued thing in this first tip that they give on this mindtools.com, is that do they really believe in it, or are they just putting this out there because they want your clicks? Are they putting this out there because they know they're gonna get an emotional response out of you? Is this a political thing, right? Like, what is going on here? Did the people who are actually producing this really believe it? And I think that's something you could apply to everything you do every day. And it's not hard to do. I mean, it's just a mindset, right? And it's, I think these type of things that most people don't bother to care about, but I, you know, if more people did this, I think we wouldn't have a Donald Trump in office.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think really any critical thinkers would have voted for Donald Trump unless they're so entrenched in the two-party system that they were simply picking, you know, the classic lesser of two evils.
Well, I would take it even as far as to say that if we had more critical thinkers on, like, say, the Hillary Clinton side or the you know, Democrat side, that they wouldn't have gone to the maybe identity politics, or they wouldn't have gone the route they went if they applied this critical thinking skills to some of the causes they've taken up, right? There's certain picking their battles better, and maybe it wouldn't have infuriated or helped fuel the fire of that Trump base, you know, or that Trump wave, you know. So it goes both ways.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I've said it a million times. When you alienate, you know, 70% of the voter base, or say that they're the cause of pretty much all the problems of the world, then yeah, I think that that's a really poor campaign strategy.
Yes.
Surprised they didn't really think that through better.
Absolutely.
It was like an attack on white men. It's like, well, white men kind of make up a large percentage of the population, so maybe you shouldn't campaign on how bad they are.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Or say, if you don't accept this, you know, certain thing that is like a percent of a percent of the population, then you're, you know, a bigot or something like that. You know, the whole transgender thing was really getting thrown around. That's something that still, it's not new, but the way that it was being put out was very aggressive. You know, and it's like I said on the podcast, it's like a very small vocal group of the left that was kind of leading the charge for this whole campaign. And they really catered to them, but they were putting their eggs in a basket of something that it's really not speaking for, you know, you weren't going to get swing voters with that.
No.
You were going to get your hardcore liberal base. You weren't going to appeal with people that were kind of sitting on the fence. You kind of drove those people off, I think, in some sense.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's funny? Today, I heard on, I think it was C-SPAN, that Bruce Jenner is considering running for Senate out of California.
How fucked up is America becoming, right?
We got Bruce Jenner on the Republican ticket.
Right. We got Bruce Jenner. Well, yeah. Kate Jenner.
Kate Jenner, now. Yeah.
So we got Kate Jenner that wants to run for Senate. And then we have Kid Rock wants to run for Senate. And a possible Dwayne The Rock Johnson that wants to run for president.
Kanye West running for president. Maybe.
And Kanye West. So, but Dwayne Johnson apparently has already started the process of like getting his information in and everything. I think I saw that on the news somewhere that he's already started the process.
And Al Franken's obviously already a senator. And there's another lesser known former Hollywood senator too. I forget his name, but
well, we had Arnold Schwarzenegger as the governor of California, the governor. He wanted to go in a higher office, but he couldn't because he wasn't, you know, American born citizen. But that movie Idiocracy is starting to seem more and more like it's.
I mean, is it crazy to? I mean, if you look at politics in America and you look at Hollywood, I mean, there's a lot of similarities there, fame and fortune and stuff like that. And, it's basically the best place for someone, you know, to fulfill an ego, you know, need and things like that. So I can't sit here and go, well, I'm too surprised that Hollywood is taking over politics.
Wait, is Ashley Judd, is she in a, does she hold political
she's
office?
She's just doing activist stuff, yeah. I don't know if she has any political ambitions. I wouldn't be surprised if she did, though. But, I mean, it's just, I'm not too surprised that Hollywood and politicians and politics are kind of merging a little bit more than typical. I'm just not surprised.
Well, maybe they're sensing a shift here. Maybe they're sensing a shift to where... you know, we're moving away from a society where we're going to have athletes and movie stars and things like that be in the club of the elites. And now, because there's going to be a shift of power from, let's say, the people to the political class, maybe the political class is going to be the hot ticket soon.
Yeah.
So maybe because they're more in tune with that.
That's how Europe went, right? I mean, that's
1%. You know, yeah.
If you're a politician in Italy, you're like the hot ish. I mean, like that's, you got private, you know, cars and stuff like that. You got, you know, motorcades. Even if you're just like some sort of like low level politician, I mean, Europe's, you know, politicians in Europe are almost like I would almost say like Hollywood here.
Yeah,
because they don't have a Hollywood,
that's
right?
What happens in socialist countries? You know.
Yeah.
And I like to, well, not that I like to bring it up, but that article that I was talking to you and Anthony about, that Weight of the Poor that came out in that publication, The Nation, back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
How there was like this insidious plot by the Communist Party to make a bunch of unsustainable programs in the United States to build a class of people, or make the class of people that were accepting government handouts so large that it, you know, makes the burden that was put on the taxpayer unsustainable, so that they switch to socialist policies, and then, you know, it kind of becomes another country in the, communist bloc.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little bit of a conspiracy theory, but I mean, like you said, now with healthcare being a push towards a single payer system, and, you know, a lot of people pushing for that $15 minimum wage, or there's talk now about a basic universal income. It's, maybe there's a little bit of meat in the sandwich for that that kind of theory. It's just something to think about.
I agree. I mean, you could go on InfoWars, too, and talk to our boy about it. I bet he'd enjoy it.
The globalist coming to spray your crops with mind control substance.
Oh, man.
He's such a fucking nut. Such a nut. He's like, it's somebody from the WWE, you know? And then great. He says he's playing a character, you know, and people still tune in. Jesus Christ. He's a performance artist.
Yeah. You know, just to get on past the, you know, the critical thinking and understanding your own biases and stuff like that, I want to highlight, like, what annoys me, right? So, my background has largely been liberal arts, and I have a sociology degree, a criminal justice degree, and a master's in international affairs. And throughout that process, there's been a lot of studies about, you know, cognitive psychology and, you know, bias and things like that, right? How do we think about things in an objective way? And what kills me, what really kills me, is how all, you know, the media or politicians or political activists who just throw around these terms like, you know, confirmation bias and, you know, white privilege or whatever it might be, right? All these things that, you know, in my academic career, we thought about it in a very deep way, and we looked at research, we read it, we really dug into it, and it's so complex. And what kills me is when people just start throwing it around, and it's annoying. But
yeah, or when they throw around logical fallacies, like they're a professional debater.
Yeah,
it's a straw man argument.
Yeah, it kills me. It's like everyone's a freaking Harvard like debate person, right? Like, it's like, come on, man. Seriously, you just read that on Wikipedia, you know? It's like, man. But our podcast itself is more about substance. We just talk about things, right? So what I want to do here is kind of keep going with the theme of what we did a little bit earlier, is talk about how we set ourselves up to think a certain way, or to kind of get to the meat and facts of things. And to kind of get past this superficial way of looking at biases and things like that, I want to introduce people to the concept of seeds, it's called. And it's a way cognitive psychologists kind of categorize biases and how we kind of group them in a very intuitive way, so you could kind of understand it. What seed stands for is similarity, expedience, experience, distance, and safety. Right, so that's seeds. And if you think about all these things that you hear in the media, and, you know, people throwing around on social media, some of them fall underneath here, and they're you know, very relevant, but just kind of give you the depth of how people look at this and how professionals look at this. You know, like confirmation bias is under expedience, right? These are, and what else is it, one that you hear all the time under here? Let me see. The halo effect, planning fallacy.
Because this person's good.
Anchoring bias. And similarity is a good one. You hear in-group, out-group all the time.
But the halo theory, I think, is kind of something that was applied to, like, Bernie Sanders.
These are all relevant theories, right? Like, these biases are very relevant and applicable to things that we can observe today. What kills me is how people dumb it down and just throw it around, right? So, you know, what I'm trying to do is just highlight, hey, you know what, these things are, these are more complex, right? Like, there's a structure of thinking here about how we look at this, and it's just not as simple as saying, oh, this is a blind spot for someone, right? Or they just don't know that they're biased, right? Because it's unconscious, you know? Like, no, I mean, there's ways to look into this, right? Like, not everyone is just, you know, just some sort of unconsciously biased against black people, right? Like, it's much more complex than that. It's hard to measure, you know? But there's a lot of interesting things here. I'll put this in the link in the notes. And like you said, the halo effect is...
I guess an example of this, right, is... I'm pretty active on Facebook because it's just a way to engage people from, you know, people that you're not even friends with, that you never met in person. You just kind of met them online and, you know, you develop a little bit of a rapport with them. And this one particular guy has a lot of friends. He posts a lot of political stuff. So I like to get in there and make comments every once in a while. But he has these two guys that are on his page that always are very... opinionated, very anti-America, anti-gun, free market capitalism, this and that. And I give my opinions and, on how, let's say, people are getting locked up in Germany for saying anti-Islamic things or something like that. You know, they rounded up, what was it, like 36 people or something like that, and threw them in jail for a speech that they determined to be hate speech.
And
I made a comment on that. And these guys are like, have you ever been to Germany? I took summers in Germany. I worked for an NGO, and I worked on the other side of the Iron Curtain, and I was given a letter by the president. So your opinion doesn't matter because I was actually there. And I'm like, well, then how can you have an opinion on the Holocaust? Because you didn't live through it. So how do you know that the Holocaust happened the way that they say? Because you weren't there. You didn't live through it. Like, it just really gets you frustrated.
It is very frustrating.
Going to be people that just make arguments that aren't really valid arguments. It's like, well, you've never been to Germany, so you can't have an opinion on Germany and what's going on over there.
Now. Yeah, it's frustrating. It really is. And if you look at these common biases, and if you look at the ladder of inference that we talked about earlier, like, you can almost, like, if you're conscious of these processes and stuff like that, you could almost, like you just said, the guy talking about, have you ever lived in Germany? I got a letter from the president, all that type of stuff. Like, you could almost, like, peg him for what's going on. Like, you'd be like, oh, God, look at this. You're distorting the fact for this reason. And, you know, it leads to, you know, here's the bias you're having right now. And, you know, as an observer, it helps us kind of understand, like, who we're dealing with. Right, we're not going to be able to sit here and teach someone in a debate on Facebook how to understand their own biases. You know, like, we're just not going to be able to do that. We're not considering, hey, why don't you go look back up at the experience under the common biases? Because I think you're displaying fundamental attribution error right now. You know, like, this just doesn't fly in debates, right? It's not like the whole, like, straw man thing. People just throw that out all the time, but that's a whole different beast when people say, oh, you're just not debating using, you know, good debating techniques, you know, like, but it's kind of funny when you kind of look back on these things that have been measured by professionals in the field and you go, wow, look at this is happening everywhere. It's almost scary because it's like, whoa, am I going to be able to make an impact on this? Am I going to be able to explain to people, like, as much as, you know, you think you have the higher ground with something, but you might be just, you know, fundamentally flawed because you're not taking into account these different things that might be affecting your decisions, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the big things is, like, the whole police encounters with people of color debate that's been going on, it's been ramped up since Trayvon Martin and, you know, you get people,
which wasn't even a police encounter, by the way.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, shooting of black
people. Yeah. But I just wanted to make that note just because it's funny how that's happened.
Yeah, but that was kind of the start of it. And then it was
You're right. You're right. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just making a note of how that thing that technically isn't the same started what it is, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, you get people saying, well, you're not black, so you can't have an opinion on it. Or you're not poor, so you can't have an opinion on poverty. And it's just really, it's frustrating to engage in any sort of debate with anyone. And I think we're seeing that. And I've said it many times before. It's like the destruction of political discourse. And how can you ever move forward when instead of rational debate, you get shouting down of people or
yeah,
labeling of people as Nazis or bigots or this or that or the other. It goes the other way, too. Libtard, communists, yeah, you know, socialists. You know, you just label people and toss them aside. And I think the thing that you posted from, you know, Mind Tools kind of gives insight, you know, into that.
Yeah.
And it's really, it does. It has a lot to do with putting our own experiences and automatically jumping to a certain assertion or presumption because of things that we've experienced. And maybe we should be more open to take in other things when we're considering facts and coming to opinions.
Yeah, and if you think about the whole framing of the different biases, you have some similarity, expedience, experience, distance, and safety. If you think about them logically, individually, similarity, right? Yes, you are gonna, as a human nature, you're gonna be more, you're gonna gravitate more towards something or someone that's similar to you, because you have something to relate to him with, right? And underneath that is in-groups and out-groups and things like that, right? Where they try to point out, like, you know, you're going to have a bias towards an in-group that you're a part of, and then anyone outside of that group is going to be considered an out-group. You're going to have a bias in that direction, too, for whatever reason. And expedience is just, it's simple. There's a ton that fall under expedience, but it's simple in that it's convenient to you. Against logic and reason, it's convenient to you. So that is almost, it's a path of least resistance, if you will. An experience, anecdotal things, right? Like, our experience walking down the street is not the experience of everyone else walking down the street, right? Like, that these things are all very logical and distance. If you're so far away from something, this is a good example of the inner city versus flyover America, right? Like, there's a big difference between someone who lives in New York City and someone who lives in rural Alabama. I can't even get Alabama out there. Alabama. But, you know, so, and then safety, right? Like, you know, you want to frame things in a certain way that, you know, kind of fits your values because you feel safe. You're protecting your identity or your group or something like that, right? Like, these are, if you think about it in an individual sense for in these sections, these are very logical things. So it makes sense. And so if you have biases, I think the bigger takeaway here is you're not a bad person. You know, like, people, like, these are natural things. They're almost instinctual. It's animalistic of us, right? Like, the thing that makes us a better person is if we understand them, and we understand that that's where we're coming from, because then we could adjust things, right? We could make a conscious decision to do certain things certain ways. But you do need to understand that first, and that's the key part of all this, actually understanding it. Don't take it because some dude on Facebook or someone on Twitter shamed you and you suddenly have all this guilt because you're a white dude, right? Like, that's not the way of doing it. It's like, really understand this. Like, really take the time to maybe read a little bit. You don't have to read a lot. I would never expect you to read the research behind this, because it's so thick and boring. You would get to, like, the first page and be like, what the F did I just read? It was just a bunch of citations, right? Like what is going on here? But
just be cognizant of it. I mean, just be cognizant of it and maybe second guess yourself before you go spouting off something, say, well, you know what? How much thought did I really put into this?
And I think I have much more respect for someone who has actually cared to really seriously look into this stuff, or really seriously take the time to research a topic that they're talking on, and they still come to a conclusion that is against mine, right? Because at least I could sit here and go, you know what? They had the best information available to them, and they still came to this opinion. I can respect that. And I'm okay with that, too, you know? But I think what kills me the most, and we talked about this on our last live stream, so this shouldn't be a new concept if you've been here before, is this idea that people kind of make up their decisions without regard to biases, without regard to, you know, facts or maybe some sort of want to have a middle ground. But they come up to these decisions based on political allegiances. And that's what kills me. Like, that is really what kills me, because that fundamentally makes you a bad citizen. And I hate saying that, because who really defines what's a good citizen and what's not? But I really do think that if you just give a blank check to a particular political party and you say, I'm going to take up your flag regardless of what it may be because I'm a part of your political party, to me, that's a bad citizen. And that's just how I define it, but I could agree that someone might criticize me for that, but it kills me, man. I mean, I just hate...
It's frustrating. Yeah. It's frustrating because it really cheapens democracy, you know, what it is to be in a democratic republic. You know, we as a voter have so much power, and I feel like people take power away from themselves by refusing to be informed, or refusing to at least, refusing to be truly informed.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means knowing both sides of the coin. So many people are, you know, would consider themselves well-read or well-educated, but if you're only confirming things that you already know to be true or already think to know that are true, then you're discounting the whole... I don't know, you're just taking the easy way out. You didn't really have to think to come to that conclusion. You're just building and adding more bricks to your little wall that you're building around.
Yeah, you're just going and you're, you know, cherry-picking things that are going to help, you know, prop up your position.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that sometimes.
Yeah,
because I've dug my heels in pretty hard in some areas. But also, I mean, I can say that as a 35-year-old man, well, soon to be 35-year-old man, you know, my belief system has changed pretty radically from the time, let's say, that I was, you know, 24, 25 to, you know, where I am now. So, I mean, in order to do that, that's really taken a lot of, you know, humility, I guess, on my part in admitting, hey, maybe I was wrong about this thing that I said before. You know, maybe not all cops are bad. Maybe, you know, America, you know, isn't so much worse than these other countries because we don't provide such a great safety net to everybody. Or, you know, because you kind of have to rethink, you know, what you value and reprocess that, you know, as you move forward. Because a lot of times, whatever situation you're in at the moment kind of forms your belief. So as your situation in life changes, your opinion on things are going to change.
You framed it absolutely perfect. I mean, I don't know how I follow that in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, it's just... Like, I can't blame people for having a particular opinion. Like for every single reason you just said, I just hope that people just kind of have a little bit of a self-reflection moment where they, you know, kind of go, what am I doing wrong? What am I, how can I be better at this? You know, because it doesn't serve anyone to be, like, be on social media and, you know, just troll people or share, you know, articles that are, like, really just feeding the beast, right? Like that, when it comes to confirmation bias or something like that. And here I am throwing around the biases, like I said, people shouldn't do, right? But it's like just being understanding of that stuff, and and realizing that there is a valid opposite opinion, you know, it just, I feel like that's just lost on people. But we're going to bring it back.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people just really have to understand what they're about, because I feel like people that are like, oh, I'm a diehard, you know, die in the wool. I'm a diehard Democrat. I'm a liberal. And I'm so proud to be that. And it's like, all right, well, what is a Democrat? What is a Democratic Party platform? And yeah. I don't think that 9 out of 10 people would be able to tell you exactly what that platform is. Because, like, the majority of them would probably focus on social issues. Say, well, we want acceptance for gays and black and equal rights for women. And, you know, we want acceptance of everyone's sexuality. And this, it's like, well, that's not really... That's part of the Conservative Party platform, too. It's The Conservative Party platform is you know, colorblind. You know, we see everybody as an individual. We don't put people into groups. And I think if people maybe knew that, they go, maybe I do identify with that. It's like, well, I'm against war, man. And it's like, well, guess what? Both parties have been parties of war. Both parties are the war party.
Think about this, too, for a second, right? The first political party that potentially, and this is only potential right now because we don't know for sure, but the first political party that might have a transgender senator could very well be a Republican Party. Think about that.
Yeah. Hey.
Right? Hey. I mean, and if you look at, like, Congress, and if you look at, like, a lot of the, you know, groups that liberals would be, you know, kind of prop up as, like, being the protected class that needs more attention or whatever, Republican Party has been one of the parties on the front edge of actually putting these people in positions of power. There's plenty of black Republicans in Congress and the House of Representatives, or Senate and the House of Representatives, and when it comes to governors and things like that. And females too. If you looked at the primaries, we had one or two primary candidates, female candidates, and then, you know, Democrats had one. Hillary, which was like the chosen one, but the chosen one because of she probably bought it, but
Or she was in collusion with the DNC.
Ooh, collusion! That famous word, collusion.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little ridiculous, because when you look at it, you know, both parties are sort of morphing into this statist sort of centralization of government power sort of model, and, you know, that used to be not what the Republicans were about, and they're, you know, the neocons are... kind of pushing that way, and we're seeing it with the healthcare bill, you know, not being able to really be changed. They keep putting out things that really aren't Republican ideas, just Republican people putting out pretty much Democratic ideas. It's a real shit show, and I think if people actually took the time to go to, you know, whatever the DNC.com, whatever the Democratic Party's website is, or even just look up Democratic Party on Wikipedia and see what the platform is and see how far away they've moved from that, then go to the Republican Party and Wikipedia and what their party platform is and see how far away they've actually moved from that, you know. People would kind of be astounded, I think.
Yeah, and I think the most probably interesting part of the Republican Party's moving away from their platform is social issues. They've come really... I think the Conservative Party... Well, the Republican Party, but conservative movement... has really come a pretty good long way from where they once were. I mean, there was a point in time where it was like... Everyone was saying gay marriage is a bad thing. Not even just conservatives. Like, Bill Clinton was saying that, right? And Barack Obama, as a senator, was saying that, right? And here we are now. I mean, I think no one would argue against it. I don't think anyone would. And
you have your really like religious right kind of people, like Mike Huckabee and
Yeah, but they've been. But where are they? Like Huckabee isn't a legitimate political force right now, and I don't think he ever will be. Yeah, I mean he's a great like talking head to throw on a network news, right? He's because he's like you know, you can't necessarily hate the guy. He's very personable, but he's not. He doesn't have any real support. You know, like he has decent support in some areas, but nothing nationally. And, you know, so you're seeing, like, in the Republican Party and the conservative movement, you know, these social aspects are, you know, they're coming to Jesus, if you will, on some of them. And, you know, probably right and rightfully so. I mean, one of my principles is, you know, just because I believe it doesn't mean I have to force it on you. And I would hope that that's something that other conservatives... Well, I guess I'm pegging myself as a conservative, but other right-leaning people would take up that cause, if not for anything else, but in the name of liberty, in the name of all the other buzzwords that they throw around, right? We should be able to do what we want and feel and think the way we want to think. I mean, to a certain degree, as long as it doesn't harm someone. But
well, how libertarian of you, Joe?
How libertarian of me. It really is. And I think, but that is socially where the conservative party, conservative movement has gone, though.
Well, like, I would say even maybe the alt-right is the biggest voice of that, you know, where you have sort of this libertarian, I would say, sort of ideology on the what's now called the alt-right. To where, you know, they would say maybe quote somebody like John Stuart Mill. I think it's John Stuart Mill. I hope our listeners out there could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was him that said, you know, the right for you to swing your arm ends at your neighbor's nose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as long as you're not doing something that's going to harm somebody else, what harm are you doing?
Yeah, and that's fine with me, right? Like that's my thing. Like if you want to be in a same-sex marriage, I'm fine with that. If you want to be transgender, I'm fine with that. Whatever you want to do, I'm fine with it as long as it doesn't affect and force something upon someone else.
Yeah, and this is where the whole free speech debate comes in, because with that very small group of, let's say, transgender people, yeah, you're getting any sort of unacceptance if you use the wrong pronoun. Like, let's say you just referred to, and I'm sure it wasn't on purpose, but you referred to Caitlyn Jenner as Bruce Jenner, which is, you know, sort of coming to America. Like, his mama named Bruce, I'm going to call him Bruce. Sort of a thing. But, like, there's no harm in it. But that could be, in some countries, like Canada, that could be like, hey, that's hate speech. Mm-hmm. We're going to fine you. We're going to put you in front of a tribunal and, you know, you're going to have to pay a fine for that because that's hate speech. But it's not hate speech. In your case, you probably misspoke.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's where the problem starts coming in. Sure, we're for anybody really doing anything that they want within reason, but... don't force me to change how I talk, or don't force me to change how I live, you know, to accommodate this small group of people.
Faux show. And you know what, while we're, you know, on the air here, I think before we started recording our podcast, the news came across that John McCain has a brain tumor. Which kind of explains his weird questioning with Comey and stuff like that. I think, you know, I kind of feel bad now because we all kind of made fun of him for it, but kind of explains a little bit of some things that have gone on with him. I guess it's a pretty bad situation. I mean, a brain tumor's, they removed it, but the reports didn't necessarily talk about what the prognosis is for him. I would imagine we all wish him a speedy recovery and things like that, and hopefully he could get to some level of comfort to be able to function. And obviously, full recovery would be amazing, but who knows what that means right now for him at his age?
Yeah, he's over 80 years old, isn't he? 81.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but think that if you have a brain tumor at that age, that it's probably. You're probably pretty close to the end. unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, you break a hip if you're over 75. The mortality rate is pretty astounding. So, yeah, brain tumor, I would imagine the outlook is not looking very rosy for Senator McCain.
Yeah.
Somebody who I haven't really agreed with on
absolutely
many things in the past. When he was running against Obama, you know, I voted for Ron Paul. But, I surely would have probably, if you put a gun in my head and said McCain or Obama, I probably would have voted for Obama.
Yeah, I just didn't think McCain was electable, right? Like, there's a very simple way of looking at candidates and, you know, almost like that the theory of when a female meets you, she knows within the first 30 seconds whether she sleep with you. Same thing with politicians. I think you know almost immediately if someone's electable. And if you can look past your allegiance to your political party, you know that. And he wasn't electable. He just wasn't.
And then he added Sarah Palin onto that fucking dumpster fire.
Yeah.
It's like, what were you thinking, man?
He thought that was like really bad consulting. That's what that was. Someone said to him, like, this would be great. It's a female. Like, oh my God. And they didn't think about her, like, very polarizing attitude and persona. And it backfired. It really did.
Yeah.
It backfired
he
really
bad. He
literally
could have picked anyone else.
It was a bad move.
Done way better. Because if memory serves me correctly, that was pretty much a landslide victory.
Yeah, it was. I don't think it was any close. It was close at all. No, I mean they called. I remember that election. They called it like 9 o'clock at night. They called it. It was like really early.
Yeah, he's just a very hawkish guy.
Yeah,
you know. Maybe he's in the military for a long time, was POW. Maybe he has biases of his own that brings him to the way that he thinks about the global community. But, I just remember hearing him talk and thinking, like, he's just going to get us mired into more shit around the world than anybody else. At least this other guy's talking about bringing people home.
Yeah.
You know, humble foreign policy at that point. You know, economics, everything else kind of went out the window. I was just looking at, this guy is a fucking warmonger. Like, that's the last thing that we
do. Yeah. He's not electable as a president. I mean, great public servant.
I can't rush her from my house.
Yeah.
Ugh, fuck.
Yeah, and she's a big flop, and they become reality stars and stuff like that, which means they've even gone further down on my list.
Easy on the eyes, she certainly was an attractive.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I agree with that. Unfortunately, it requires more than good looks.
Maybe
from
that's
me.
What he was hoping. He's like, hey, I'll get the Budweiser in a NASCAR crowd.
I agree. I think that there was some really bad consulting or advice given to him about who's running mate should have been, and I think they did pin it on superficial things like that. I really do. I think they thought a female, she's attractive, she's a family woman, she was a governor, like, or she was a governor at the time. Like, this is perfect. I think that there was a lot of groupthink going on when they made that decision. They didn't really look at it from a different optic and go, wait a minute, she's very polarizing. Like,
oh, she speaks in like whimsy, whimsical hockey mom down home speak. You know, she's very accessible to the people. You know, they don't want somebody out there putting figures up and laying out plans. They want sound bites. You know, and, they picked the wrong person to give them that.
In many ways, I think she helped give rise to the regressive left. To be honest with you. I think she helped to kind of underpin their existence.
Yeah.
Just because she was like an easy target to kind of say, look how like horrible this is. Like, look how like dumb people are. And then the regressive left obviously took it to a whole nother level. But
yeah, well, I mean, you had George Bush where everybody's like, look at him, he can't even talk, he can't even. Like, he's reading a kid's book. He looked all confused when they told him that 9/11 happened. Like, look at him. He's just a big dummy. And then, you know, the successor
And Sarah Palin comes around.
McCain Palin. And it just was even more like, look at the right.
Holy shit.
Stupid hicks that want hockey moms and, you know, down home cooking and shit. They don't know anything about politics. Like, you know, the left is sharp, you know. We know what's going on.
What's going on?
I gotta piss. 1 second.
I gotta piss. 1 second. And on that note, we will play some music. If it plays. This is the podcast without a name. Live stream post recording. Rich is peeing right now. For what that's worth. This is a good time if you're listening somewhere to either jump on Facebook, Twitter, or somewhere else you could message us and throw a question our way, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, this is like maybe a whole other can of worms or whatever to open, but like, just looking at like elections, they're a little bit fascinating, and the fact is like how fast people can go from this is the unbeatable person, this is the guy, to like, this guy's a fucking idiot. You can't like Ben Carson, Herman Cain.
Yeah.
Like, even Ted Cruz, it was like, this is the guy. This is our Marco Rubio, you know? And just a little stupid thing like him taking a sip of water when he was like making that statement. And then all of a sudden it was just like, done. Political career dead. Rubio's not the guy. Look at him. He needed to take a sip of water. He's weak.
I feel like Rubio is just so fake.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like a weak person.
Yeah.
And not because he took a sip of water, just he seems like he doesn't really stand for anything. He's like, hey guys, what do you want me to think? Yeah, is that what's going on now? Alright, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like good old Marco to me.
That's why I was, like, almost in favor. Like, I kind of liked Huntsman, to be honest with you. Like, when he was in the whole discussion. I like Huntsman, and yeah. I liked Rand Paul, obviously.
Well, Rand Paul, I think, is, like, everyone's, like, favorite, but no one wants to say it.
Yeah, he was polling at, like, 2%. Yeah. It's like, if you're a real member of the GOP, if you're a true conservative, how could you not stand with his ideas?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's like he's being tainted by his dad's legacy or like what it is, but
I think there is a little bit of that. I think there is.
But the man is always very reasoned and articulate, and I mean, he lives by what he says. Like when he was Senator of Kentucky, he had like, it was like $2 million like surplus, or it was like millions of dollars. He like put it right back. He's like, I'm not going to spend this on anything. He's like, I'm just putting this right back in our budget. We're cool. We're in the green now.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that what people want?
Apparently not. Right?
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to meddle in affairs that don't affect, you know, directly affect our national security. And people are like, oh, that makes you an isolationist. That makes you weak. And it's like, no, that makes him
reasonable.
Reasonable, yeah, different.
And different, yes. Because where has everything else gotten us, you know?
And that's so weird that people always say, I want to vote for change, I want to vote for change, I want to vote for change. And they always end up voting for the same fucking person all the time.
Same parties. I mean, and we talk about Rand Paul and stuff like that, but they're technically not Republicans, you know?
Well, I think he has libertarian leanings, but I mean, I think he probably sticks most true to the actual Republican Party platform.
Well, he probably sticks closer to the conservative party platform. Remember, there is a delta here between the Republican Party and conservatives.
The movement, humble foreign policy, less government.
Yeah,
you know.
But I would say he is more like
economy. Like,
yeah.
What's bad about that?
Oh no, I'm not saying anything's bad about it. What I'm saying is I think the Republican platform has morphed into its own thing, whereas you have someone like Rand Paul, who is very libertarian, but probably more true to a conservative platform than most, you know, Republican conservatives, quote unquote, would believe. You know, like, I think that, like, I mean, maybe this goes back to what we talked about with the healthcare situation. I don't think Republicans, as a political party in Senate and even the White House, have the spine to really uphold a conservative value. Like, what was the last conservative value a Republican politician has fought for and actually won? And we're not talking about like a situation where it's like, oh well, who cares? I mean, it doesn't matter. They don't control both the House and Senate. How are they going to get there, right? But we have Republican-controlled House and Senate and the presidency. And yet, I don't see many Republican things happening or conservative things happening. You see some. You see some deregulation. I'll give Trump that, right? But this whole, like, oh, we're going to repeal and replace or just repeal Obamacare, that's a bunch of bullshit because it's not happening. It could happen. They could do that right now if they wanted to. If Republicans lived up to their campaign promises, Obamacare would be a thing of the past, or at least on its way out right now. It's all bullshit. They're spineless. They're like jellyfish.
Because that's not the flavor of the week.
Yeah.
Like you said, the optic doesn't look good. If you repeal Obamacare, then you're uninsuring how many millions of people, and that's all people see.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there's going to be people that are uninsured. They're not seeing, you know, the cost benefit analysis of that move.
Yeah,
they're looking at, well, is this going to get me reelected, you know, to my seat next year? Like, I got a pretty cushy job, making a few hundred grand. Got a pension. I got, you know, the best healthcare available. Like, do I really want to be a part of the private sector again?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I have to show up at work, you know?
Yeah.
Because how often do these people even have to show up to vote? How many times do you hear in campaigns?
Yeah, yeah. Like,
there were, like, all these, you know, resolutions
so-and-so
he voted on, like, four.
Yeah.
And there was, like, 50. Well, where was he? Well, he was talking to donors and, you know.
They get their breaks and they have, you know, they go back and, you know, talk to their constituents. That's what they say. And it's like, oh, come on. Just get up. Get out there and vote. Like, just do what people sent you there to do.
It's so fucked up because they're supposed to be representatives of people and they're not out there representing.
And this all comes down to, you know, the American people. Like, let's be real here, man. The only people we have to blame for this are
the voters.
Ourselves. Yeah. Like, that's it. That's it. Because, you know what? You could send a message to your representatives and vote for their opposition. And you know what? I know that there's people out there that might go, well, that's stupid. That's dumb. Because what happens is you vote for the opposition. Their opposition wins. And you get someone like Trump who might be completely against your values or something like that. But you know what? We have checks and balances. And everything is temporary. As much as I know we don't have term limits for senators and stuff like that and representatives. But there is checks and balances.
And there should be. It's so stupid.
And it keeps people on toes because the beauty of, like, okay, without term limits, that's fine. But the beauty of it all is in, you know, 2 or 4 years, you can just vote them out.
Like, how long has...
That's the term limit, right? I mean, if we were doing our duty as citizens, we wouldn't really need term limits because we would be holding their feet to the fire.
Like, how long was the guy like Strom Thurmond, a fucking senator?
Yeah.
He's like 90 years old in a diaper, and all I can eat is applesauce and shit. And people are like, oh, well, he's red. I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah. Absolutely correct, man. Oh, it's frustrating. It really is frustrating because it's...
That's why I think they need term limits. I mean, put some new blood in there, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and I agree. The current situation, we need term limits. But if we were all doing our, like, if we were actually, like, conscious of what we were doing when we were voting, I don't think term limits would have been that needed. Because we go, what the, dude, you're, like, you're comatose. So you're gone, right? Like, that's how I would be. Like, why would I want someone who's comatose being my representative? I wouldn't want that, right? Or on the other hand, it's like, well, you're doing things that only represent what I think right now, so you're gone, like that, right? But instead, what we have is, you're red, you're blue, I'm voting for you.
Well, we coin see that. It in like local governments.
Yeah.
Like, look at Philadelphia. It's so mired in the Democratic Party. Like, there's hardly any Republicans that win. Like, there's Republicans that win certain districts and shit like that, but the majority of the city government is Democrat. And it'll always be Democrat. The last time that there was a Republican mayor in Philadelphia was, like, back in the 50s. Oh, and people always make the assumption that Frank Rizzo was a Republican. Well, maybe his leanings were that way, but guess what? He changed his party affiliation if he ever was. To run as a Democrat, because Republicans have no chance in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you have to do it. Like, I have a good friend of mine who's from Philadelphia, and he has political aspirations.
And is he named Dan?
No, it's not. And he's very conservative. He's a very conservative.
Our mutual friend Dan ran for.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he ran for a city councilman, and he lost. He ran as a Republican now.
Well, yeah. That's his first mistake.
Which is odd, because he's a union. He's a union member. He's a member of a union.
Well, there's that conflict between the union members being a blue, and then the fact of being a blue-collar worker, too, right? Like, there's a conflict there. A lot of, in one hand, union workers are, very liberal leaning and democratic leaning because of that. But there is the person who goes to 9 to 5 and works every day, who's in the real world type of shit, that is very conservative.
No, I got nothing against union workers either. But I mean, like, you have, let's say, electrician or steam fitter or plumber getting paid like $70 to $80 an hour for doing a job that, a private industry guy is maybe getting paid like $30, $40 an hour for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, well, why would they want to vote against that? I wouldn't want to vote against that.
Yeah, that's true. You make a good point there. But anyway, just to quickly finish my story, I have a good friend who's from Philadelphia, and he's political. He wants to be, he's going to law school right now, but he wants to be a politician. And he's a conservative. We talk all the time, so I understand his positions on things. And I told him, I was like, you're going to have to become a Democrat, because he wants to go back to Philly. He wants to run in Philadelphia. That's where his heart is, And I said, you're going to have to become a Democrat. He's like, I know. I was like, so what you're going to do is you're going to have to just be a Democrat by name and just go covert. And he said that's his plan. Like, that's what he's going to do. And you can't blame him. Like, if you want to win in Philly, like, you absolutely have to be a Democrat. Whether it's city council, mayor or whatever it is, Senate or whatever. Like, it's just what you got to do. It's a foregone conclusion. So you're wasting your time if you're a competent conservative in the city of Philadelphia. You have to be a Democrat. So you just kind of got to go undercover.
Well, that's what Rizzo did.
Yeah.
I mean, he was pretty successful, in doing that. And a lot of people hated him. But I got to say, shit wasn't really popping off when he was mayor.
No, I mean, he was legit.
If you talk to police, the police loved him.
Yeah, it's because they supported him.
These guys are starting like a riot downtown. He's like, hey, you don't got to put on your uniforms. We're going to bust you down there. I want you to take all these people that are standing up on the roof, just fucking throw them off. I got your back.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, I'm going to toss a bunch of these people off the fucking roof.
Yeah, I mean, he was brutal in that regard, but he did get shit done. I mean, he's a tough character. I mean, I personally like him. I could see where people are intimidated by him and maybe thought he was a little rough, you know? But the one thing I don't agree with was, like, everyone was like, oh, he just hated black people. Like, they do label him as racist. Like, the statue in front of the police station down in Philly, the police headquarters, like, there are people protesting that pretty much on a daily basis. They're trying to have it removed. And I'm pretty sure people will. I'm pretty sure the current political structure will fold to that at some point. But, is he racist or was he racist? He's dead, obviously. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to measure racism. It really is. It's hard to... Unless someone screams F U N word, it's hard to measure it, right? Like, someone could just say you're racist, and if they, you know, the right ears go up, you're suddenly racist. If someone screams it and there's no one there, like a tree, you know, falling into woods when there's no one there to hear it, does it really happen? Like, I don't know, right? Like, it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're Law and Order, you're racist, right? I mean, it's like, well, you're part of the prison industrial complex. You're putting all these young black men in jail and breaking up black families and this and that, and it's like, well, what if I'm just anti-crime? You know, and statistically, yeah, there's more African-Americans that are involved in crime. Is that my fault? That a statistical anomaly is something that I'm fighting against? I'm not fighting against the color. I'm fighting against murder, rape, robbery, petty theft, what have you. No?
Yeah. Oh, I agree with all these things, Rich. But we've gotten to the point where it is 1:19 a.m.
Yeah, we did go for a while.
On the East Coast, we've gone an hour and 17 minutes. What?
We did on this?
Yeah.
Holy shit, we said we were going to do 20 minutes.
Yeah, about 10 minutes of that was, like, music, you know, so an hour and 7 minutes. Regardless,
somebody, Mike Dombrowski, said that is what's literally killing America.
And he's absolutely right.
I don't even know what he meant.
I know what he meant. He meant something's killing America. And that is what is killing America. No, I didn't notice that till after we had gotten past whatever part of the conversation was. I have to get a little better with that. Now that we actually have people that comment, right? But... we are the podcast without a name, without Anthony. A couple withouts there. You can find us on Facebook with at the podcast without a name, on Twitter at No Name Podcast, or you can find us on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Spreaker, not Squeaker, SoundCloud, everywhere else.
Periscope? Are we on Periscope?
Oh, yeah, we're live streaming on Periscope right now, but they won't get our... like our podcast downloads. But you can, yeah, look out for our live streams on YouTube, Periscope, Stream.me, YouNow, Facebook, and Spreaker too. We're live streaming audio on there.
Had listeners on the Facebook live feed tonight.
Whoop whoop. I'll take it. Anyway, reach out to us, send us a message, comment on our Facebook page, go like us on Facebook, go rate us on iTunes, go rate us on whatever your platform is that you subscribe to and use. We want to hear from you. Give us some shit. Listen to our old stuff and give us some more shit, right?
Yeah. Totally give us your feedback. Negative, positive, we don't care. Anything helps us. Help us be better. Can't do that without your input.
Oh no, wrong one. I meant to play this one. Rich, you always have the last word. I'm going to give it to you.
No, I mean, I really enjoy this. I like it. It's a form of therapy for me. It helps me unload, get some of the shit that's on my mind out. And I enjoy it. So help it be more enjoyable. You know, if you're out there listening, please, please engage us, because we... that's what we're about. We want to engage people. So don't be shy. You know, don't be afraid to be the first comment, you know, like, whatever. Because we will get back to you, we will engage you, and it will be fun. Uh-huh.